Welcome again. It's another Thursday night recording of the Horse Around Podcast. Andrew Mason, Andy Lindahl hanging with you as we get ready for the Broncos and the Raiders and what is just another huge game. I don't know that I've said that so often in the first four games of a season, but with the way this schedule sets up, Andrew Mason, that is certainly how it is in my mind for the Broncos. The Raiders come into town. They've been embarrassed by the Washington Redskins, and anybody that saw that game, embarrassed is not too strong a word. Those guys got physically manhandled. I was very surprised at what the Redskins could do to the offensive line, and I think it's going to be an interesting battle this week in a game that I don't know what else to. I'm not going to sugarcoat. Those absolutely have to have it.
Yeah, I think a home game, a divisional game. You know, as Vance Joseph said Wednesday, counts double because of those circumstances. And then just, you know, we've talked about the demanding schedule the Broncos have. We've talked about it on here. We've both talked about it on Orange and Blue 760 on our respective shows. And you've got the three-game road trip that starts after a couple more home games here against the Raiders and the Giants. And then you look at the rest of the schedule and you look at a trip to Philadelphia looming at the end of that three-game road trip. You look at a trip to Washington and look at what Washington did to the Raiders. Obviously, the Raiders struggled. I mean, it was a bad night for them, no doubt. But some of that was what the Redskins did to the Raiders. I think the Redskins may be a better team than any of us may have initially realized. And so all of a sudden that game on Christmas Eve, that maybe you thought, okay, that's a good chance for the Broncos to pick up a late season win. Now maybe that one looks a lot tougher than you initially thought you're looking at the schedule and saying, okay, win-loss, you know, however you thought the schedule was going to go. So you've got to get these wins at home while you can. Just looking ahead at the mountains that loom beyond the bye week and for the rest of the schedule. So, yeah, this is one you have to have. If the Chiefs win on Monday night at home against Washington, the loser of this game is going to be two back in the division. And the way the Chiefs look, two back in the division may be too much to overcome if you're going to try to win this division. So, yeah, this is – I hate to use the term must win in week four, but this is pretty much shaping up as that kind of game, especially this being a home game for the Broncos. You've got to take care of your business at home. Look back at last year, things late in the season started to unravel when you lost a home divisional game to Kansas City, and that shows you what can happen when you drop a winnable division game at home in the AFC West. Got to get it done on Sunday against the Raiders.
Yeah, and again, as you laid it out, when you look at the Chiefs are the team that you're chasing, and with the way the Chiefs' schedule sets up, and I'm getting from some people they think I'm putting too much into the schedule. When the Chiefs get to play every other week home and away and don't have those extended road trips that we talked about, I'm not making too much of the schedule. And this is how the rest of the division felt when Peyton Manning was a quarterback here. Right now you're looking at the Chiefs trying to figure out where does a loss come. Now, you know what? Chiefs got to face the Redskins. Maybe the Redskins bring that same kind of effort, even though they're going into Arrowhead, and maybe they find a way to get a win and help the Broncos out. But, Andrew, as I look at it, unfortunately, with the Patriot game behind the Chiefs, now Denver has a chance to hand them two, but let's be realistic about it. The Denver-Kansas City series has been fairly home and home. They've had a couple odd splits going back to the 2015 season, where Denver handed the Chiefs a loss at home, and then the Chiefs did it to Denver in the famous Peyton Manning benching game. But other than that, last year it looked like Denver was going to get him at home, and then they lose in overtime, and then it wasn't really even a competitive game on Christmas night, as unfortunately we all remember. So to me, if you can't count on handing the Chiefs two losses, and it just doesn't look like there's many lying on the schedule for this team without an extended road trip in play.
Yeah. And interesting, when they face the Broncos at the end of October, it's not after a bye, but it's after a Thursday night game. So they have 11 days between games, between the Raider game on Thursday night, October 19th, and the Broncos coming in on October 30th. So they're going to be pretty well rested when they see the Broncos the first time. So that's another potential advantage that they have in that head-to-head game.
All right, so let's break down what this team needs to do. I mean, I guess trying to touch on Buffalo while looking ahead to Washington, the Buffalo game to me is a tough one to read. And I hate to make excuses for players, but to me, sometimes excuses are reasons. And I know in the NFL they don't like excuses, and Vance Joseph made that clear this week. He said about the Emmanuel Sanders play, just make the catch and we won't worry about whether you bobbled it or not. Make the right throw and we won't worry about if you bobbled it or not. Vaughn Miller, don't give the ref an opportunity to throw the flag, something that Vaughn himself said afterwards. But to me, it was a hot day. Both teams look frankly lethargic, and it was not a very energetic game to me in that fourth quarter. You could feel it through the TV, quite honestly, that both teams looked to me like they had kind of started to feel the effects of the heat, of which Tyler Palumbas, our sideline guy, had told us it was 100 degrees on that field during the game. And it looked like there was some miscommunication in the secondary. So looking back and looking ahead, you know, the offense has got to hit the opportunities when they have them, and the defense has just got to get that, especially in the secondary, mainly the communication that Chris Harris has told us about, it's got to get tightened up. And I think it showed up on Sunday that it wasn't as tight as it needs to be.
Yeah. And the challenge that the Bills presented, it was also a bit different, and that put a little bit more of a burden on the secondary in terms of the communication, because you had that uber mobile quarterback in Tyrod Taylor. So you had to keep an eye on him when he got outside of the pocket, and I think that sort of broke some things down a little bit. Now, that's not a challenge that you're going to have on a week in, week out basis. So that's something that may come as a relief to the Broncos in future weeks, that you're not worried about a quarterback who can break off a 30 or 40 yard run like that kind of back breaking run that'll flip the field and change the game. But at the same time, certainly with quarterbacks that aren't as fleet of foot as Tyrod Taylor, but certainly can still, you know, can at least get 10, 12 yards with their feet, and can move the quarterback outside the pocket from time to time, they're going to study that film, and they're going to look for ideas, because we haven't seen very many teams over the last 3 years have that sort of success against the Broncos secondary as the Bills did. Now, certainly the Broncos did very well against the Bills running game, that an outstanding running game the last 3 years, and Denver neutralized him. Once again, the Broncos defensive line won match after match at the line of scrimmage. So that's three games in a row that the Broncos up front have taken care of business, neutralized a running game, made an opponent one-dimensional. So you can lean on that as a positive, but certainly some things that have to be cleaned up in the secondary. That being said, this, even though the Raiders have caused opponents a lot of trouble in the last season, plus the Broncos have had a lot of success, especially when Aqib Talib and Chris Harris Jr. both been healthy. They've had a lot of success against Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. The three games that Talib and Harris have played against those two receivers, they've held the two of them to a combined average of 54 yards a game.
Yeah, it's one of those. It was funny. I guess just a quick story from the radio show this morning, and if you want to catch me, it's 7 to 10 on Orange and Blue 760, 103.5 HD2, the Denver Broncos app and desktop at denverbroncos.com, the iHeartRadio app. Orange and Blue 760 is where you find the station. We hear from a lot of you across the country, I should say, both on the radio station and on Twitter and the text line and the whole deal. But we were talking to Chris Harris this morning. I'd seen a headline, and we read it in our morning wire about how Amari Cooper allegedly was talking trash, according to Josh Norman, who obviously lives in his own world from the Washington Redskins. But he felt that Amari Cooper was talking a lot of trash, and that was what motivated him. He and Crabtree couldn't keep their mouths shut. So we asked Chris Harris about it, because Amari Cooper said, I don't remember saying anything to Josh Norman. And Chris Harris confirmed, he says Amari never talks. Now, he says Michael talks plenty for both of them, But he said that Amari never, he goes, that kid literally never talks. He's never heard that kid say anything as far as talking trash. So I thought that was funny. But going back to the Raider matchup where the Broncos certainly got the better of them, Michael Crabtree lost a necklace right after Christmas last year. Aqib Talib thought it was nice, wanted to, you know, it was the old, you can look at it, but don't look with your hands. And Aqib decided he'd look with his hands at that necklace. And Chris doesn't know where that necklace is to this day there. Andrew, I asked you, did you find out where the necklace is?
I don't know. I didn't have a chance to check, though. I didn't see Aqib Talib or Chris Harris in the locker room today, so I didn't have a chance to go and do any investigative work on it.
Well, that's too bad. We need to find out where the necklace, because like I said, I was telling Tyler, if it were me being Aqib Talib, I'd have taken the necklace, I'd have shown it at dinner, I'd have shown it in bed, I'd have shown it, you know, the necklace would be living a pretty good life in a series of Snapchats that I'd make sure I'd be sending Michael Crabtree. Here's your necklace. Kind of like that gnome that disappeared. And then, remember somebody was taking gnomes and then taking pictures of the gnome and sending it back to the owner in all different points of the world. So, sounds like something Andrew Mason would do. The picture of his gnomes and all the college games that he traveled to. Maybe we'll have to get you a gnome that goes to some of your college adventures. I don't want to spend a ton of time on it because to me, Andrew, I got into radio to not talk politics. I respect what the players wanted to do and why they did it. I also respect those that believe in standing in the sanctity of the national anthem. And I've fallen in lockstep with John Elway when he said, let's try to get back to football. And I think that's what most of us would like to do now. But I don't want to pass up a chance on the podcast to not let you react. I'm glad everyone's going to come out and stand. I'm glad they took a vote. And I hope the rest of the year we just kind of get back to football. Because I think Vance Joseph, he's a very smart guy. He said today at his press conference, it's just become an atmosphere where effective conversation isn't happening. So it's time to just put it on the shelf for a while and let everybody maybe calm down.
Yeah, and I think just look at the national chatter the last few days. I mean, it's overshadowing football. And look, there's, you know, go back to where this began and you know, when Colin Kaepernick kneeled last year, when Brandon Marshall kneeled. It's gone in some different directions, and and obviously, with what was said, last week by the president, that certainly it's interesting. Like this thing had kind of it had largely gone dormant as far as players kneeling and sitting. It was, it was only an issue in scattered spots. I mean, Brandon Marshall was standing for the national anthem. He stood for the second half of last season. His focus, was on. He turned his focus to, issues of importance to him. I mean, had a lot of outreach, with schools, with domestic violence shelters, with outreach and dialogue with the Denver Police Department. And I also want to give credit to Brandon Marshall for taking the next step, for not simply just kneeling and having that be it, for really going the extra mile with this and really kind of putting some heft behind it and saying, okay, I had the kneeling last year, but what can I do to kind of help make things better? What can I do to go beyond that? But I think it was a really good move for everyone to kind of come together and say, okay, we're going to stand and issue that statement to say, look, we're still, the players are, still concerned about issues of social justice and things like that, that were the initial reason last year that Marshall and others were kneeling. But, they want the focus to kind of, at least on game days and on a day-to-day basis, to be back on football. And I think that's a positive thing. That's a positive thing for the team. It's a positive thing for the players. And I think, and I asked Vance Joseph about this today, and he offered some positive words as well. The fact that right there in the locker room with Marshall is an example of someone who took an initial protest and went the extra miles with it, and didn't decide to to figure out what he could do, where he could try to make a difference, try to affect some change. That actually can serve as an example for players to give back more in the community, to be community leaders, to take on, to in their spare time, take on causes that are near and dear to their hearts, that are calling to their conscience, while also maintaining their focus on football when they're at the facility and when they're playing games and all that. So it's the best of both worlds for the Broncos. And I think I think everyone on Sunday that kneeled, they made their statement, and now going forward, they can focus on football. I think it's a healthy thing to kind of move on and just focus on football and gameness.
Well, this is a team that has plenty to focus on right now. We talked a little bit about it from the defensive side of the football as the Raiders roll into town. The offensive side of the ball, it was a little bit of an interesting game last week, too. This is a Raiders defense that you can attack, you know.
Yes.
I find it interesting because this defense, you know, we talked to Lincoln Kennedy today. Lincoln Kennedy said, hey, look, there's been many Super Bowl champs that have been a one-sided team. He's not overly concerned about it right now, and I respect the opinions of Lincoln Kennedy football-wise, and that's fine, but I beg to differ. You and I watched a 2013 team that frankly had a better defensive unit in my mind than what the Raiders are toting out there right now. You know, they had in 2013, they had Sean Phillips acting as a pass rusher. They had Malik Jackson starting to come into his own. Derek Wolfe had a good year that ultimately helped earn him a contract. You know, a lot of good things going on. Robert Ayers had a pretty good year for him. One of his better years in a Denver Bronco uniform. So it's not like that Bronco defense was necessarily awful that was playing that year. I think it was better than this Raider offense, and or Raider defense, I should say. And this Raider offense, I just think, I don't know, Andrew, just history teaches us if you're going to be a one-sided team, you better be a one-sided defensive team, because offensive teams, you're just going to have those days to find that offensive consistency game in and game out. Especially when you come into a place like Sports Authority Field. If the Raiders think they're going to come in here and do check with me's, I just don't think that's going to work in the kind of environment and rowdy atmosphere we've seen the first two home games here of the season.
Yeah, defense tends to be more consistent from week to week, and defense also tends to do a better job of translating when you go on the road. I mean, you know, we were talking about some of the defensive struggles in Buffalo, but at the same time, you look at giving up 26 points. Six of those 26 came on drives that saw Buffalo not even get a first down because of a field position that came off of a special teams plays. So, you know, you take those out, you're talking about a defense that, you know, we'll tell you, hey, it wasn't one of our best days, but you go on the road and hold a team that had some explosive pass plays to 20, and you hold their running game in check. You know, you had a lot going for you. So, I think the defense can. If you're going to have something, you want to have the defense. And the Raiders right now, you know, they've got Khalil Mack, they've got Bruce. You know, Bruce Irvin can generate pressure on the edge, but it's not a very consistent defense. At this point, there's still a lot of holes, particularly when you get into the secondary. I think Carl Joseph's got a lot of potential at safety, and they'll move him all around, and sometimes he'll attack in the pass rush, but he's still developing. There may be the Raiders are kind of in an interesting spot right now, because as you saw Sunday, when the offense wasn't there against Washington, it sort of all imploded from there. So if it's it'll be fascinating to see where they go going forward, because in terms, even though they put up a lot of points against the Jets, but they had in week two, but they had a lot of short fields to work with. If they don't have those short fields against the Broncos, the offense, may not have, be able to put the big numbers on the board that they may need to in order to win. It's a team that's not in transition, but certainly it's a team that's it seems to be finding it's they're trying to find their way. A little bit, and we have a new offensive coordinator, Bill Musgrave, from last year. He's now, he's now with the Broncos, and I think because the offense isn't point a minute right now, that because their defense still has some of the issues that it had the previous 2 years, you've had some inconsistency with the Raiders, and until they get their defense kind of up to another level, they may continue to have the kind of some scattershot results from time to time.
Yeah, and it was interesting because Kennedy basically told us, we all saw Marshawn Lynch as maybe their feature back. He's getting about 10 to 15 carries. He's basically on the Jamal Charles plan right now, Andrew. So,
yeah.
And when I've seen him, you know, he's had some beast mode like runs, but he's not consistently the Marshawn Lynch that we remember. And I'm not surprised when a guy takes a year off, and a running back especially, timing isn't always there right away. You know, it just is what it is when guys take a year off. So, very interesting.
To use a long ago example, John Riggins took a year, he held out for a year, came back in 1981 to the Redskins, proclaiming, "I'm broke, I'm bored, and I'm back." And now in 1982, he had the year that he went off and basically drove the Redskins to a Super Bowl win. It was a season long and playoff run that really helped him get into the Hall of Fame, and was the MVP. He was the MVP in Super Bowl 17, but he wasn't quite there in 1981, his first year back. Now, Marshawn Lynch, I think, you know, watch what he does the second half of the season. I think he'll find his groove, but it's interesting. They use him, and they have, you know, Jalen Richard's kind of more of a speed guy. It's sort of a, you know, kind of a, it's a 1-2 punch, but it's kind of a thunder and lightning type punch. They do different things, but use complementary, they can be pretty effective, and it'll be interesting to see how they use them to complement each other in the next few weeks, because I think they may, even though they may kind of have Marshawn Lynch on a quasi Jamal Charles plan, although I think seeing more plays than Jamal Charles, as Charles played 21 snaps last Sunday in Buffalo, I think They're two guys with different skill sets and different strengths that can kind of complement each other, and there may be some interesting and positive possibilities for them if they complement each other correctly.
Well, it'll be a fascinating game to watch. By the way, I liked very much what I saw, Jamal Charles getting that first touchdown officially in a Bronco uniform in that game last week, and just I like the rhythm he was kind of falling into. Going to be intriguing to watch him. Course
I'll
of
give you a, and I'll give you a stat, Andy. I hate to interrupt you, but the Broncos haven't lost a game in which they've run for at least 125 yards since the New England game in 2013.
Well, what do you know? All of a sudden, the Broncos, a little bit of balance on offense, nice mm-hmm. defensive effort. If they can sustain it, and maybe Trevor gets, I don't know, you know what? I have mixed emotions about Trevor's game, because I know it didn't go the way the kid wanted it to in Buffalo, but I like the way, you know, everybody said they didn't want to see safe. He wasn't playing safe. He was trying to extend plays. He was trying to give his guys a shot. You know, I think it got away from him maybe a little bit in the fourth quarter. He was pressing, but I also think we saw a little bit of what happens when you don't have that training camp together and you're not going through every drill together as a starting unit. I think when a play breaks down, everyone thinks it's just that Trevor's conservative. I think we're kind of seeing a little bit as he tries to extend plays. They're just, he and Emmanuel Sanders and Benny Fowler and Demaryius Thomas, they're just not used to what do we do when we're making something up as we go along, you know? And I think as the year goes along, hopefully that kind of chemistry sort of develops.
Yeah, I think it will. And I think looking at the interceptions, the second one in particular, I mean, that's, you know, Andy, I don't think you'll ever see Trevor Siemian have an interception like that second one in particular again. I don't think he'll ever make that mistake again. One thing we've seen from Trevor Siemian over the course of his 17 starts is that he does learn from his mistakes, and he'll grow from that. And I think that's just something that is, you know, that is a teachable moment. And that's another thing to remember. This is his 17th start. He's still clearly at the point of his career where he's having teachable moments like that interception, like really the you know, the entire second half in Buffalo. I think he'll grow from that. I think he's going to get better from that. But the thing is, you know, there's certainly urgency to get better, because like we said earlier in the podcast, it's the game you gotta have. Home game in the division with the Chiefs, you know, one of two unbeaten teams in the league right now.
Yeah, bottom line is this, as we wrap it up. We said you had to be 4-1 when you started that 3-game trip that goes LA to KC to Philly. Well, you've got your one now. You got to go get the next two at home. Very, very doable. Let's see if they can pull it off. He's Andrew Mason. Hear him every day on Orange and Blue 760, 10 to noon. Read him all over DenverBroncos.com. Watch him on the videos on the site. I'm Andy Lindahl. You hear me 7 to 10 a.m. with Tyler Palumbis. And we will talk to you next week before the Broncos take a bye. No rest for the weary here, although I don't know that everyone's really weary yet. It's a little early in the year for the bye. But we'll talk to you next time on the Horse and Round podcast.